Now our third case, Doss versus First Franklin. And let's give them a minute to get their places. And for Mr. Doss, Mr. Brooks.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Lloyd Brooks on behalf of Charles Doss. This matter finds its way before you on the granting of a motion to dismiss in the district court level. This case was filed seeking rescission of a mortgage loan under the Truth in Lending Act. The defendants filed a motion to dismiss, asserting the argument that Mr. Doss had previously sold his home prior to electing to rescind, and therefore under the Truth in Lending Act, his ability to do so had expired. The district court considered that argument and granted the motion to dismiss. Despite an opposition to the motion, Mr. Doss had proffered to the court information suggesting that he had in fact not sold his property. The defendant's only assertion or conclusion that led them to making the argument that the property had been sold is a deed which they proffered was recorded by the Cook County Recorder of Deeds. Mr. Doss, in response to the motion to dismiss, indicates to the court that, in fact, that deed was a forgery. He had not sold his home, and, in fact, tendered in response to the motion a copy of a quiet title suit that had already been filed in state court. Despite having that information, the district court granted the motion to dismiss, finding that, in fact, the deed was irrefutable evidence that the property had been sold, and therefore my client's right to rescind had expired.
That quiet title actually got filed after the motion to dismiss was filed, correct?
That is correct.
Did your client ever sign an affidavit saying that the deed was a forgery?
There is not in this action. However, in the quiet title action, there's a stipulation
Stipulation that it's a forgery, isn't there?
It was not a stipulation as to forgery. Unfortunately, because of the time element involved, and this is addressed in my briefs, and I addressed it with the district court in a motion for reconsideration, we were put into a time crunch. The district court's decision to dismiss the action based on this alleged deed was dangerously close, into which the three-year period that my client should have had to rescind his loan would have expired. Therefore, in the quiet title action, in an effort to try to get it resolved, to clear up the issue of whether or not my client had sold his home, there had to be a negotiation. And as Your Honors might take into account, a defendant is not going to admit under oath that they committed fraud or forgery. So in order to get a stipulation and get the deed rescinded by court order, there was a stipulation that there were no negotiations that were completed. There was no real estate contract. There was no intent on my client's part to deliver a deed, and in fact, no deed was delivered. And
then there's a client sworn anywhere that the deed's a forgery.
There is no sworn testimony, because unfortunately, this was done in pleading stage. And that's our major issue with what the district court did.
Doesn't your client have a default entry against First Franklin?
It does, Your Honor.
Which has not been overturned.
It was not overturned.
I guess I'm trying to figure out what First Franklin's doing here in the appellate court.
Interesting question, Your Honor. First Franklin was defaulted. However, they filed a motion to vacate that. And as part of that motion, they joined in the arguments made by the other defendants as to the dismissal. And it was district court level. It dismissed the entire case.
But never ruled on the motion to vacate the entry of default.
There was not an express ruling saying that it was granted or denied. However, the language of the district court opinion certainly lent itself to saying it was granting the motion dismissed, finding that there was no right to rescind. And so there was no express statement that First Franklin, the dismissal applied as to them as well. However, that was certainly the clear import of not only the first memorandum of opinion, but then also the second memorandum of opinion that was entered after the motion for reconsideration. We find fault with the district court's ruling for two reasons. The first one, on a 12B6 motion, it goes without saying that every allegation made by the plaintiff has to be assumed as true. Here, the district court even though had allegations in front of it that the deed that it was reviewing on this 12B6 motion was a forgery and that Mr. Doss had not sold his home, accepted the deed is accurate anyway. And the defendants have asserted, well, the judge had the ability and the right on the 12B6 motion to consider the deed. Mr. Doss doesn't object to the court looking at the deed. Certainly it was public record. However, that by itself does not now amount to the deed being valid. Clearly under Illinois law, and this is a point that has not been refuted by the defendants, a deed, even if recorded, is not irrefutable evidence. The district court took it as irrefutable evidence, meaning that there's nothing Mr. Doss could say or prove that would invalidate it.
An affidavit would have helped.
Well, an affidavit may have helped, Your Honor, but this was on a Rule 12b-6 motion. In fact, in the motion of reconsideration, we brought that point up to the district court that we were on a 12b-6, and that, in fact, the district court's analysis altered this into a motion for summary judgment. The district court expressly disagreed that this was not a motion for summary judgment, and at that point, my client can't assert any evidence. Bringing forth an affidavit was irrelevant on a motion to dismiss under 12b-6. And secondly, the district court's ruling, particularly in the denial of the motion for reconsideration, suggests that the district court was altering the standard for pleadings, particularly for a TILA claim, by then imposing upon the plaintiff the burden of proving, beyond just alleging, but proving that no defenses existed to, or at least the defendant's defense did not exist at the pleading stage. That's totally outside of what would be allowed on a 12b-6 motion, and particularly with respect to a TILA claim, which is the language of TILA is interpreted in favor and liberally in favor of the consumer. So to now ask Mr. Doss to not only anticipate what the defense was going to be of the defendants, not only allege what facts that would get around that defense before it's even asserted, but then prove it before the defendants have a pleading on file. That's totally outside of what 12b-6 would allow, and certainly the Truth in Lending Act as well. And even if the court somehow took the position that Mr. Doss's burden was to somehow show that deed was a forgery at the pleading stage, then the district court's denial of the motion to allow us to file an amended complaint was an abuse of discretion, because clearly in the proposed amended complaint, which it was attached to the motion, it set forth all the allegations that Mr. Doss had not agreed to sell his home, he did not sign that deed, and in fact it was a forgery. Everything that the district court needed in order to counteract the allegations being made by the defendants. Nonetheless, the district court found that somehow the motion was untimely, even though it was filed 8 days after the motion to dismiss had been granted. And in fact, no judgment had been entered as of yet. The judgment was subsequently filed. The memorandum came out 8 days later. The motion to reconsider was filed, and then subsequently the judgment. So, and there is some argument by the defendants that Rule 59E would apply and therefore new arguments can be raised. Our position is Rule 59 didn't even apply. There was no judgment yet. And even if there was, certainly this was clear error being pointed out by Mr. Doss, that the judge took into account this deed, and not just took into account, but held it as irrefutable at the pleading stage, when all that is necessary on Rule 12b-6 is that the court find that there are allegations that, if supported, would therefore entitle Mr. Doss to a finding in his favor. So, and back to Your Honor's point about the affidavit, that's the reason why there was no affidavit. We were at the pleading stage. It was a Rule 12b-6 motion. There had been no notice by either the district court or the defendants that they were moving under Rule 56. There's some assertion about whether or not the time period or the expiration of my client's TILA right was a subject matter jurisdiction issue, which brings in Rule 12b-1. There was no notice either by the defendants or the district court that it was reviewing the issue as a 12b-1 either of which would have entitled Mr. Doss then to alert the court that we were seeking a hearing, had evidence, or wanted discovery. None of those things happened, yet the district court granted Rule 12b-6.
expiration. Do you want to save some rebuttal?
Yeah, I'm going to save the rest of my rebuttal. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Nusgaard.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Jonathan Nusgaard. I'm counsel for defendants J.P. Morgan Chase and Saxon Mortgage Services. Mr. Doss filed a complaint in the district court as his first attempt to rescind a mortgage loan transaction which he entered into in August of 2004. Sometime thereafter, Mr. Doss experienced financial difficulties, and in June of 2006, deeded the property to two persons, Kent O. Williams and Hazel Turner. The defendants filed a motion to dismiss the TILA complaint only, alleging that the act of deeding the property from Mr. Doss to these two individuals constituted a sale, and that pursuant to Section 1635F of the Truth in Lending Act, a sale of the property which is secured by a mortgage terminates rescission.
What's this time limit on? What's this 3-year time limit on rescission?
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't that under some sort of extraordinary circumstance? Right of rescission. That's 3 or 7 days, isn't it?
The Truth in Lending Act provides a borrower with 3 days from signing of the loan documents to basically rethink whether they want to enter into the mortgage in refinance transactions only, and gives them an opportunity to rescind. However, the code also provides for an extended 3-year right of rescission if, for instance, they allege they didn't receive multiple notices of the right to cancel or the Truth in Lending disclosure statement contained material facts that were incorrect. In this case, the plaintiff claimed that the Truth in Lending statement was violated because the APR was overstated due to an allegation that title insurance was overcharged, which would give rise to a 3-year right of rescission. However, as we argued, without ownership, they failed to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. As Judge Duryagin stated in the motion to reconsider, essentially ownership of the property is a condition precedent to bringing a TILA rescission claim.
Well, that being the case, isn't that more appropriately addressed on 12b-1 motion and standard rather than 12b-6?
No, Your Honor. There was separate 12b-1 arguments which could have been raised in that the district court is court of limited jurisdiction. They need to state a federal question. Truth in Lending is a federal question. And without an ability to rescind, there is no federal question. We didn't expressly bring that before the district court. But that was raised in our briefs on appeal as the district court's jurisdiction is material and should be raised at any point, especially in front of this court. We did raise a 12b-6 motion. The defendants had an opportunity to respond to the motion with an affidavit.
Was there any notice given that it was going to be treated as summary judgment?
It wasn't treated as summary judgment, Your Honor. The district court explicitly stated that we can consider this document being the deed. We can take judicial notice of it without converting a 12b-6 into a Rule 56 motion for summary judgment.
What about the alleged forgery? If it's a forgery, obviously that's the complaint. I mean, that's what it said. So, without going beyond that, isn't that have to be taken as true?
Your Honor, that is all that was brought before the court was we allege there was a forgery. As Your Honors noted, Mr. Doss could have presented an affidavit in response to the motion to dismiss. He could have asked court to convert the motion to dismiss into a Rule 56 motion. He could have asked the court to stay it to conduct further discovery. He didn't do any of those things. He failed to procedurally advance his case in a proper posture.
He did complain that he owns the property, didn't he?
Yes, he does allege that.
So that fact has to be presumed to be true by the judge.
It would be presumed true, except for the fact that we brought forth the deed, which the court can take judicial notice of, and when an allegation of the complaint is contradicted by a document which the court can take notice of, then the document has to control.
That sounds a lot more like a Rule 56 determination or a 12b-1 than a 12b-6.
Your Honor, even if the court were to rule under 12b-1 that the district court lacked jurisdiction, there is no harm to Mr. Doss.
Shouldn't he have had some notice that it was going to be treated in that way as opposed to treated as a 12b-6 motion?
I don't think that the district court treated the motion as a 12b-1 or a Rule 56 motion, Your Honor. I think the district court treated this as a straight motion to dismiss for failure to state the claim, specifically finding that you cannot state the claim if you don't own the property.
But he alleged that he did.
I'm sorry?
But he alleged that he did.
He alleged that he did. Yes, Your Honor. As far as the fraud or forgery, Mr. Doss brought no evidence to the table until well after the complaint was dismissed. And in fact, the motion to reconsider, just a point that was brought up by Mr. Doss's counsel, the motion to reconsider was brought after the motion to dismiss was granted. There was some confusion about the timing there, but the motion to dismiss was granted on April 17th. The motion to reconsider was brought on April 25th. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Goldberg. You're here for First Financial?
First Franklin.
Right. What are you doing here? First Franklin, isn't there a default entry pending before Judge Duryagin that has never been vacated?
There is not, Your Honor. The minute order that was entered on April 17th of 2007, the one that initially dismissed the complaint, the entire case, stated all pending dates and motions are hereby stricken as moot.
That's your motion to vacate the entry of default?
He had a motion to vacate pending at that time.
And there was an entry of default?
Right. And we had a motion to vacate, and our motion, which was pending, was stricken as moot.
Which leaves the entry of default in existence, doesn't it?
The court below seemed to by action, seemed to infer that our motion to vacate, because the entire case was dismissed ab initio, that the default was also void. He allowed us to participate in the response to the motion for reconsideration. With respect to the issues of how the court treated it, we can look to the court's language in the order with respect to the motion for reconsideration that it did address the issue of jurisdiction. And a court has the obligation of addressing jurisdiction by itself, even sua sponte, once it's been raised. And when the issue of the valid deed, which is presumptively valid, of a designation of transfer of ownership under Illinois law, absent the rebuttable evidence of clear and convincing evidence to suggest that it isn't valid, the court had to assess whether it had jurisdiction.
So it's your position it is a 12b-1 determination, not a 12b-6.
It was a jurisdictional determination, but it wasn't necessarily pursuant to 12b-1. A court has the ability to sua sponte determine its own jurisdiction, even absent a 12b-1 standard under...
Well, that being the case, shouldn't the plaintiff have some notice that that's how it's going to be addressed?
But he did have notice to a certain extent, specifically after the dismissal was granted. When he filed the motion for reconsideration, he had the obligation of presenting some type of evidence in support of the fact that the deed was invalid.
At that point, he's got a pending quiet title action challenging the validity of that deed.
And a simple affidavit would have sufficed to at least create some type of factual basis to support his motion for reconsideration, which he failed to provide. All the court had in determining its jurisdiction, it was, on one side, a valid recorded deed pursuant to Illinois law, absent clear and convincing evidence, and on the other side, nothing. All it had was a unverified suit for quiet title. And it made the determination that it did not, at that point, have jurisdiction to hear this case. And the reasoning is solid, because at that point, a court needs to know whether or not it can actually hear the case, being a court of limited jurisdiction. To say that if I wanted to file a civil rights action, but my civil rights haven't been violated, I'll ask the court to stay the matter until I get evidence that my civil rights have been violated, it would open floodgates as far as litigation is concerned. You wouldn't necessarily have to establish your jurisdiction prior to bringing cases in federal court. And accordingly, we would ask that the court deny the appeal.
Thank you. How much rebuttal time is left? 1 minute.
I'll make it really brief. I just addressed the last point, which was the timing in which plaintiff would have had notice that there was a potential jurisdictional question. In neither memorandum opinion in the district court was there any mention of the words subject matter jurisdiction. The first time that was raised is by the defendants on appeal, particularly in the first opinion issued in April by the district court. There was no mention of jurisdictional questions. So therefore, Mr. Doss, even then, would not have had notice to try to provide evidence to the district court on his motion for reconsideration, because, again, we were on a Rule 12b-6, and in fact, in the district court's second opinion denying the motion for reconsideration, it clearly stuck to his guns that it was a 12b-6 determination, not 12b-1, and not a Rule 56. And for those reasons, this matter should be reversed and give Mr. Doss an opportunity to proceed on his claim. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. This will be taken under advisement.